This is Wild Talk, brought to you by IUCN and WWF.
This month on Wild Talk, we spoke to Clive Tizar, Head of Communications at WWF's Arctic Network Initiative, about the upcoming Catlin Arctic Survey. Clive, thank you very much for joining us on Wild Talk this month. I was wondering if you could talk to us about the Catlin Arctic Survey, which is coming up in the next little while.
Yeah, the Catlin Arctic Survey is interesting. It's an expedition by three people from Britain, one of whom is a very well-known polar explorer called Penn Haddow, and he's joined by two other also quite well-experienced polar adventurers, one of whom is the team leader who will be navigating their way through the ice, and the other one of whom is a photographer and videographer so that they can actually document everything that they're doing as they're going along. Now, the thing that WWF is interested in is this expedition is going to go across about 1,000 kilometers of Arctic sea ice from Canada's high Arctic islands to the North Pole. We have a particular scientific interest in what they're doing as well, because what they're going to be dragging along behind them in these enormous heavy sleds as they walk over the Arctic sea ice is a form of radar that can penetrate the ice. Really, what you get is you get a very clear picture of the thickness of the sea ice as they're going. So they're using that as one method. They're also going to be doing some more conventional methods, like stopping and actually drilling holes through the ice so that they can get those other physical measurements too. So what they'll emerge with, we hope, at the end of their expedition is a fairly comprehensive picture of the thickness of the Arctic sea ice. Now, you know, the NASA satellites and other people's satellites have been doing a great job over the last more than 30 years of actually figuring out the extent of the Arctic sea ice. So through those pictures, I mean, we've been able to very graphically show people the way that the Arctic sea ice has been shrinking over the years as a result of climate change. And the problem that the people who then model this ice disappearance for the future are having is that they don't know how thick the ice is. So they're saying, okay, we know that it's disappearing and it's generally disappearing at this rate, but be able to figure out really how long it will persist in the summer in the future and exactly where it will persist and all the different sort of ice dynamics that go along with that. We really need to know the thickness of the sea ice. And so that's been a crucial missing measure to date.
What will the effects be upon the regional ecosystem? We, you know, for example, last year, the U.S. government put polar bears as threatened, mostly down to the fact that their habitat was melting away. What other ecosystem problems are arising from this?
Well, I mean, it's totally systemic, and it's, you know, you're right to talk about ecosystem level changes, because, you know, a lot of people have heard about the polar bears and about that sort of thing, and there are other quite iconic ice-dependent species. Species that really need the ice. And there's a lot of seals, for instance, that breed on the ice. Walruses require the ice to rest and feed. There's a speculation, although not much is really known about this, that narwhals, for instance, those big horned whales, they actually require sea ice as a place of feeding and refuge from killer whales. So, you know, there's a whole lot of ice-dependent species that depend very directly on the ice that people know about and can see. But then there's a whole system that you can't see. The Arctic sea ice provides, the Arctic ice edge around the sea ice is one of the most productive areas in the Arctic Ocean. So there's a whole bunch of tiny little single-celled creatures just frolicking around the edges of this floe edge. If you don't have the ice, you don't have that habitat anymore. So you're talking about, you know, all the different levels of animals that depend on the ice, from these single-celled creatures right up to big ones like bowhead whales that are adapted to that ice. So you take the ice out of the system, we really don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what their level of adaptation might be, but we speculate that for some of them, particularly for species such as polar bears, the future does not look bright if you take away the sea ice. It's a difference, not in kind, but a difference in extent. So, you know, polar bears come on land when the ice disappears, and they tend to fast. Now, what that, at the moment, the amount of time that they're spending on land has been okay for most of the populations. Now you start increasing the time that they spend on land and the time that they don't have access to their main prey, the seal.
Yeah.
And you're talking about longer fasting periods, poorer condition, and at some point that starts to affect their reproductive success, so you start to see a decline in numbers.
Absolutely. Now, on the larger issues, the global issues, how important is the Arctic sea ice melting to the potential for catastrophic effects across the world?
Well, this is something that we're actually, as the Arctic program, focusing on quite a lot over the next year. You know, we're looking at what are the nature and extent of these feedbacks. We know on a large scale what they are. For instance, if you remove the ice and snow cover, it's called the albedo effect. It's like a giant mirror over the north of the world, and it sort of reflects back a lot of the sun's heat into the atmosphere. So, you know, that means that the ground and the water particularly don't warm up as much.
Mm-hmm.
So you start gradually taking away that mirror, you're shrinking it and shrinking it in time and space. And what happens, of course, is that more of that heat is absorbed. And as more of that heat is absorbed, that's when it starts to affect all the global climate systems.
Mm-hmm.
But, what we're trying to focus on right now is telling people that we believe, taking all the evidence in aggregate, that there is a possibility of turning this around, but it does take urgent and immediate action. So we're really keen on getting that message across to people before Copenhagen.
Now, the survey itself is being supported by some quite important organizations.
There's several organizations supporting it. For instance, Cambridge University, that have been brought in to help crunch some of the numbers that they come up with afterwards to help do that sort of modeling and forecasting that I was talking about at the beginning.
Certainly. Well, we look forward to hearing those results. And Clive, thank you very much for joining us on Wild Talk this month.
You're welcome.
Wild Talk. You can find out more on the web at panda.org or at iucn.org.